The Holy Gospel for today is taken from the fifth chapter of the Gospel of St. Mark. And because of the length of the reading, you may go ahead and be seated. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the elder leaders of the synagogue named Jairus came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So Jesus went with him, and a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him, and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement, and he strictly ordered them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. This is the gospel of the Lord. Funny that no one grabbed the softball. All right. Well, about 6 years ago, I wrote a dramatic reading based on our gospel lesson for today. And I came across it last week, and I sent out an invitation, and Amy and Joyce, if you want to come up and you can go ahead and get in your places, offered to share it this morning. And these two stories that you heard me read from the Gospel of Mark are two of my favorite stories, and I think they're two of the most difficult stories. They're my favorite because they share about how these women, one very young and one older, experienced healing through the gift of Jesus' touch. And yet they're difficult because we know that we don't always experience healing like they did, and that healing comes in many different forms. We also know that touch of Jesus, whatever kind of healing, whether it's a spiritual healing or a physical healing, always brings with it hope and mercy. So let us hear the story of these two women.
"My life used to be quite different. My husband and I had a wonderful life together. He was a successful businessman. We lived in a beautiful home with fruit trees and a small vineyard. When I gave birth to our fourth son, I knew our lives had been blessed. 8 years later, everything changed. On our youngest son's birthday, my husband collapsed in the vineyard. We all tried, but no one could revive him. That was when my life began to crumble. It was during this time of great sorrow that I began to bleed, not all the time, but then every day, a lot. It did not stop. With all the blood loss, I grew very tired. I became a shell of who I used to be. My older sons wanted me to be well. They sent me to many physicians and healers, even sorcerers, who did unspeakable, painful things to try to stop the bleeding. But nothing worked. It only got worse. I could no longer hide it. I couldn't even leave our home. I knew the law of Moses. I was unclean. Anyone I touched or who touched me, even by accident, even if you sat in a chair I sat in, would be defiled. Unable to resume normal routines until going through a long period of ritual purification, I prayed for God to help me. My sons tried to carry on their father's business, but people shunned them because of me. We had to move out of our home into a much smaller one. Yet my sons still couldn't provide for their families, so one by one, they moved to another village. Even though my youngest son was not yet a man, they took him with them. I understood. My illness was a burden. They suffered because of me. They had no friends. My youngest son was even beaten twice, all because of me and my affliction. They were trying to protect him and provide for their children. Leaving was necessary for them, even though it pained me deeply. My youngest son came to visit each week. He snuck out the back door and brought me food. These visits both warmed my heart and broke it. There is no mercy for one like me.
My name is Rebecca. My husband is Jairus. He is the leader of the synagogue. We have a good life, a beautiful home with fruit trees and a vineyard. We have three older sons and a young daughter. Our sons are good men. They make us proud. They work alongside their father in the synagogue. Our daughter, however, is my husband's joy. If I need any proof, just have to hear her name, Abigail, which means a father's joy. One day, our joy began to crumble. While picking plums to make a pie, Abigail collapsed. Our faithful servants brought her in the house and laid her down. I felt Abigail's skin, and she was burning hot. We tried giving her water and cooling her down with wet cloths, but her fever got worse. The next day, Abigail just moaned and thrashed about, her body burning with fever. Physicians and healers came, but no one could do anything to help our precious little girl. On the third day, her skin became pale, and she could barely breathe. The physician broke our hearts when he said Abigail was dying. She would be gone by morning.
One day, my son told me that Jesus was on his way through town. My son had told me many stories about this man, how his touch brings life, hope, healing. I knew I had to see this man. Why not? I had absolutely nothing to lose. I put a veil over my face and went to the town square.
I sat at Abigail's side holding her hand, praying for a miracle, anything that would save my daughter. Jairus fell to his knees sobbing. He shook his head and cried out, "Have I lost favor with God? Is there no mercy for a little one like her? God, help her. Help Abigail." Abigail's servant girl, Sarah, put her hand on my shoulder and said, "There is a man named Jesus, a man of God, and his touch brings life, hope, healing. This morning in the market, I heard that he is coming through town today." Jairus looked at me and then looked at Abigail and ran out the door. I nodded for Sarah to follow him. I held Abigail's hand, praying for her to hold on, as I watched her chest barely rise and fall.
There was quite a buzz in town that morning, anticipating his arrival. This may sound strange, but before I saw him, I felt him. I knew Jesus was near. I felt it in the depth of my soul, the power of the presence of God. I felt something I had not felt for a long time, hope. Then I saw him across the market coming from the docks. He was speaking to a man, Jairus. Jairus also was a holy man who worked in the synagogue. Jesus walked with him. They were in a hurry, heading my way. People crowded around them. Everyone wanted to see Jesus, to get close. Many were curious. Some, like me, longed for a miracle and another chance at life. They were pushing their way through the crowd. I knew I didn't have much time. When he got close, I had to go to him immediately. I didn't need to say a word, just touch him. He couldn't see me or feel me touch him because I didn't want to defile him. He was a godly man. Just touch his robe and I will be healed.
Abigail stopped breathing. Her heart stopped beating. I sent word to Jairus that it was too late. She was gone. Poor Jairus, I was filled with such sorrow that I could not even cry.
I pushed my way into the crowd. There were so many people. I hid my face and tried so hard not to touch anyone, but I lost him. I couldn't see him anywhere. He was gone. Tears welled up in my eyes, and I fell to my knees, not even caring if I was trampled. I don't know what made me look up, but there he was, moving right beside me, so close I could touch him. I reached out and barely even touched the hem of his robe as he passed by. It was as if time stood still. I brought my hand to my heart and felt a burning within. It moved through my entire being like a fire, settling in my womb, setting my body free. Then I heard his voice, a powerful voice. Who touched my robe? His question jarred me into reality. I'd touched him. I was the one. I panicked. I defiled this holy man, and he knew it. His disciples pushed him along, reminding him it was very crowded. But Jesus stopped again. Who touched me? Ashamed, I cried out and confessed what I had done and why. What he did next, I will never forget. He took my hand, he helped me to my feet, and he smiled at me. Daughter, he said, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. With his touch, with his words, my whole world changed. Just then, more people pressed in, calling for Jairus. I heard them tell him his daughter was dead and to let the teacher go. Jesus put his hand on Jairus' shoulder, looked him in the eye, and said, "Do not fear, only believe." Yes, Jairus, believe, believe. There is hope. There is healing. There is mercy.
It felt like Jairus was gone a lifetime. Well, he was, Abigail's lifetime. She was gone. What could this teacher do now? Why do I fool myself with hope? Then I heard his voice, a powerful voice, telling those that gathered outside to be quiet. This child is not dead, but sleeping. They began laughing, and I felt desperate. Jesus came into the room. I was frightened as he took Abigail's hand. Holding her small hand in his, he called out to her, "Talitha cum, get up, my little girl." At once, Abigail opened her eyes. We did not even breathe as Jesus helped her to her feet and she began moving around the room, dancing right into Jairus' arms. I was unable to move, unable to blink, unable to breathe. I wanted to believe, but I felt her pulse. Jesus smiled at me and told Sarah to get Abigail something to eat. Sarah handed her the first thing she could find, a plum. Abigail opened her mouth and crunched down on the plum. I threw my arms around her, laughing and crying and hugging. There is hope. There is mercy, even for one like me.
Life does not always go how we expect.
Sometimes there is great sorrow.
But in Jesus, there is mercy.
There is always mercy.
In Jesus, there is hope.
There is always hope.
Even for one like me.